Hi, everyone. This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is 2 days before Christmas, Tuesday, December 23rd, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Usually, Austin would be joining us, but he is at home in North Carolina visiting his family for Christmas, so it is just I, described as a devoted seeker of the Law of One, who, alongside Austin, manages LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually-oriented information and fostering community. Towards this end, has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch for further instructions. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody on board and ready?
We're ready.
I am.
All righty. That takes us into our opening quote from January 6, 1991. Quo says, "The nature of infinity is specifically the present moment realized for the first time in its many overtones, undertones, harmonics, and depth. The resonant present moment is infinity and is the home of the self."
Thank you, Gary. Infinity. So hard to think about. Impossible to imagine. And you say, okay, everything after this, and then until, well, it doesn't stop. But I can't think about that it doesn't stop. My mind is oriented to thinking things go from here to here, and the timing is such and such, and so I'm definitely in the finite world in my mind. Infinity. See, when I was little, I'd lie in bed at night and try really hard to think of it. It was my first metaphysical realization that I couldn't. I don't know what to do with that. I didn't do anything with it then except go, wow, we have a concept that we can't even describe or think of in any decent way. Drew me. It drew me all through my childhood, teenagehood, all through my young years. I was seeking, and one of the main things was, what was infinity? And then the rock came along and said, well, infinity and unity are the same thing. Intellectually, that made a lot of sense. I was relieved. Times in meditation, I've had the feeling of dropping very deeply into the present moment. And it's a wonderful feeling. I love that feeling. It helps me to sit with a group, can get it by myself sometimes. But I don't come into the realization that I am experiencing infinity. I haven't had that realization yet. Have you? Have you ever dropped so deeply into the present moment And that infinity became unity. And this present moment became infinity. I look forward to that. May we all meditate a little more each day, each week, each month. And rest in the present moment deeper and deeper until we do, like coming round a corner, all surprise experience. In time, it was a good attempt. Amen.
Amen. Our first question submitted in advance comes from our good friend Terry, who's also the Chinese translator of the Law of One. Terry writes, while reading a transcript, I found a potential paradox or a loophole, shall I say. His first quote from that transcript says, a negative spirit is able to use the same love and light of the one of the infinite creator as the positive source, end quote. Terry comments, yep, we all learn from those of Ra that the eye of the infinite one blinks towards neither side. Then the second quote, Terry says, if that's the truth, how come a, quote, challenge in the name of love, end quote, can be effective to drive away a negative spirit? As far as I know, a negative fourth density spirit also lives in the density of love. Please clarify my puzzle. Namaste and thanks, Terry. And I'll read the, both quotes for greater context. The first one says, suffice it to say that when an instrument challenges a spirit in the name of its most dearly held principle, which is the fulcrum of that entity's life, that negative spirit who is able to use the same love and light of the infinite creator as the positive source, and therefore is able to feel the same as the positive source, cannot succeed in remaining within the aura of the channel. The second quote says, challenge in the name of love. An entity who does not vibrate in love must leave. It may seem that this is a very wispy and insubstantial thing to trust and to rely upon, and yet we say to you that all of that which is involved in being an instrument will be likewise wispy and insubstantial from the viewpoint of consensus reality. For your scientists have not yet created instrumentation to measure the vibrations that are used in channeling. Were they able to have that instrumentation, there would be a much more scientific and therefore trustable way for people who trust science to understand channeling. End quote.
Well, I can begin, and I'll let you guys continue. The negative orientation does not work with the green ray. It skips it. It goes from yellow ray to blue ray. And that is its flaw that causes it to have to give up its negative orientation in sixth density, because it has to use the green ray. It just has to. There's no choice to it in sixth density. It becomes obvious. And so in order to continue to evolve, the negative orientation switches, embraces love, embraces the green ray, to use personally. Yes, it can use the love and light of the infinite creator, because that is subsumed in light. And it works with light in a very skillful way. A way that somehow makes up for its not using love to learn. Have not any defense against love, because they don't think it's real. When they discover a challenge in the name of love, it's like coming up against a brick wall. They may not understand it, but they can't get past it. And I can guarantee you, as a channel, that I have challenged many a negative entity and forced it to leave. It just can't stay.
This is a big puzzle to me, because I trust that that it does work, that it is effective to invoke and stand upon the highest principle for which, in the instrument's case, one would die, and that serves as a protection, that love itself serves as a protection. But why? The question of why puzzles me, because like Terry is saying, the negative entity is using the same light as the positive entity. It's like saying two entities are using the same water. Why is one water able to stop this other water? And that may be a very poor metaphor, but in trying to shed light on Terry's question, that helps me to conceive of it. So why does this invoking stop them? And Carla mentioned the brick wall. It's really, but then why is that a brick wall if it's the same light? Why is the negative's omission of love create that stoppage against the positive entity invoking love? And it's really a murky scenario for me. In trying to push my mind in finding some illumination on the topic, I figured that there's got to be a very good metaphor in physics that would help clarify the situation. Maybe, and I don't know what that metaphor would be, but maybe something to do with magnetism, because it is the same light, but it's polarized light, and something about the way magnetism works in terms of repulsion and attraction. Maybe there's a metaphor in the way that crystals operate in terms of the regular bonding of the elements within the crystal, making that crystalline entity strong without effort. Maybe there's a metaphor in biology that has to do with the strength of a cell wall resisting a virus in some way. I don't know, but it seems that when the instrument is invoking its highest principle for protection and tuning, it's also, in a way, declaring who it is on a higher level. And somehow that energetically lifts the self up, maybe, or puts on a cloak of protection that is greater than the personality, and in some way that makes the self more impervious to negative greeting or negative corruption of the channel. The negative entity finds less to exploit about that self, because that the self that has invoked the Christ principle, or whatever is highest and best, is vibrating in purer light, vibrating more brightly, vibrating more strongly, and therefore, again, more impervious, less able to be exploited. Kind of like exercising to get to your highest peak health, and in that health, your immunity is greater, your strength is greater, your energy is greater, and therefore you're less susceptible to disease, you're less open to be exploited or compromised by disease. I'm reaching and grasping here, but that's the best headway I can make into it, Terry.
I think it might be helpful to remember what Ross said about the nature of both the positive and the negative path. Now, Ross said the positive path was that which was. It is a good representation of the way reality, creation, works. The negative path is the path of that which is not. It takes an awful lot of energy to travel the negative path and to all things about one under one's dominion, to control everything around one. But with enough effort at certain times and levels of existence through apparently mid-sixth density, this is possible. I think the reason the challenge from a positive channel works upon a negative entity is because a negative entity can't control the love that's being sent to him or her or it. The positive entity is sending unconditional love to the negative entity, to the negative entity's greeting, and surrounds itself in this love and light. Because the negative entity cannot control that sending of love, that positive entity just keeps doing it, then the negative entity has to leave or lose polarization because it can't be controlled. And the negative entity must be able to control all that about it in order to continue its polarization.
That's really interesting as I consider that. So it seems love itself, by definition, cannot be controlled, which is probably why the negative entity omits it completely from their energy pattern, because it's antithetical to what they're attempting to do.
Right.
And its presence would ruin their attempts to control. So what they're controlling are energies, you might say, that are lesser than love. And when love is brought into the equation, it frustrates them.
That, as long as the positive channel stays within its tuning of sending love to all, then it will be just fine. If it partakes in any way of the negative entity's game of my power against your power and I'm going to fight you, then it loses its power, because that fighting an adversarial relationship is a negative game plan. So as long as the positive entity stays positive and sees all as the creator and sends love to all, then there's no problem.
Yeah, I think you could just say the men against New Testament. Judgment against forgiveness. Those are the two ways to go. And when you have judgment that leads to justice, which leads to our system of justice, which is everything except forgiving. It never forgives anything. It doesn't make an exception. It's rigid. It doesn't have the flexibility, the give and take, the sway of love. So all of our laws are basically service to self. But if you didn't have them, there would be utter chaos. So they have to be put into a situation, you know, a bunch of laws, a system that is as fair as possible. Notice these adjectives: fair, just. These are all negatively oriented ideas, but they work to the betterment of the human condition, no question about it, which is odd.
And it brings to mind this idea of love as protection, a couple associated concepts. One is that there is strength and discipline involved in that. Often love is conceived of in romantic, mushy, some often ineffectual terms, especially to those of bent or those who are hardened and jaded by the world. But the love that's being described here, and as Jim mentioned, the instrument staying within its tuning, that sort of love is a discipline. To keep the attention there, to keep the heart open, especially as the heart is barraged by a world that doesn't seem to give love. So it's an act of will, but that leads to the second associated concept that came to mind, and that it is an act of will, it is an act of strength, but at the same time, it's an act of vulnerability, because it goes against all of our conventional ideas of what it is to defend the self.
That's right.
It seems like not defense at all, but it actually is, at least metaphysically speaking, the strongest possible armor or shield or defense that you could have, and that's the letting go and surrendering and loving.
And again, I think it's important that you, as an instrument offering this challenge, offer it in unconditional love, that your reason for offering it is because you do wish to love this entity. You're not trying to make the entity go away. It just so happens it will go away. But the higher purpose here and reason for offering it is because this is part of the Creator too, and I love this entity too. I do not see the separation.
Yeah, and that's a subtle way that a lot of people could be misdirected and misguided in terms of seeing love as a technique or as a weapon, whereas you're really actually intending to love that negative entity.
Right.
And as a byproduct, like you were saying, that negative entity is sickened and doesn't like it. It just so happened in an email I was discussing or probing the concept of love as protection. And I found four short quotes from Ra on the topic, and I'll use this opportunity to read them. In 63.5, Ra says, "Continue in love and praise and thanksgiving to the Creator. Love is the great protector." 75.2, Ra says, "There is no protection greater than love." 91.38, "We commend the continual fidelity of the group to the ideals of harmony and thanksgiving. This shall be your great protection." And 55.2, "There is no magic greater than honest distortion towards love." Any further thoughts from you guys on this question?
Not for me.
I think I've shot my wad.
Yeah. Gave it our best.
Well, all right. Moving along to our next few questions. Actually, we'll break it up. Kayshawn via Bring Forth writes, "Firstly, what is the Christ principle?"
Well, I think that's forgiveness. Jim, what do you think?
I've seen the Christ principle or Christhood or the mantle of Christ as being basically what we're all trying for here in the third density. We're trying to open our hearts to unconditional love so that love is the product of all our energy expenditures. We use various catalysts that seem to take us away from that in order to find our way back. So I would see the Christ principle as seeing all as the Creator and loving all as the Creator, and having that be your reality. And it's another way of looking at things. I mean, it's a whole different lens. Mm-hmm. It's much wider and clearer.
Jim just mentioned it's what we're attempting to do here or achieve here or become here. Meaning to me, it's kind of... I associate it then with fourth density, and I wonder if another way to respond to this question would be to say that the fourth density entity is an exemplification of the Christ principle.
Right.
On the positive side.
The population of fourth density is made up of everybody who's got their Christ principle. That's your ticket to get in.
To me, then, the Christ principle is a state of awareness, and it's... can be characterized by unconditional love, universal love, and the person living or embodying or following the Christ principle is also, would you guys say it's necessarily true that someone living the path of Christ principality is necessarily a martyr or following the path of martyrdom?
Definitely following that path. Whether it turns out to be a full martyrdom or not just depends on the situation, I guess.
But such an entity is willing to give totally of the self to be of service to others, because there doesn't, in that type of a frame of mind, there isn't any sense of loss when you give. The soul is enhanced when it loves, because it is love.
So it's ready and available for the service of martyrdom, but if the right circumstance doesn't arrive, then they may not actually make the act of the martyr.
I think the psalm says, "My heart and my flesh rejoice in the living God." And so if you're just resting in the living God, the love, then you're ready for whatever is to come. But you might have to die for it.
That raises an interesting aspect of martyrdom to my mind, and that's that recalling your earlier years, Carla, there was almost a hope of martyrdom. Like some part of you desired that. Do you think that is common to those of this mentality or awareness?
Well, I do. I think that there are a lot of doormats out there. But if we live long enough, we mature past that, and we learn that we can't be doormats to everybody and survive. We have to make boundaries where we need a limit, Let me say, I'm sorry, I need this limit. This is a boundary I can't go further than. And you just make a line there. It's not made in anything but absolute love. But it respects the other person, and it also respects the self. That's the main thing. You have to respect yourself. You can't simply give, 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 give. You have to be able to understand yourself well enough to know what your limitations are. And if you can't give past a certain amount, then don't. Because you want to survive to give again.
Agreed. Any thoughts further on that question?
Nope.
All right. Kayshawn goes on to ask about the Christ principle. Can it be applied to other aspects of spiritual growth?
Well, it seems to me that it is the spiritual growth. I mean, the Christ principle is what we're shooting for everywhere, in everything, think, do, and say. So, it would be the product of the spiritual efforts or spiritual growth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Jim's answer on that one. I was kind of confused by the wording and not sure how to respond. Just saying that Christ's principle is the growth. Clarifies that for me. Kayshawn, if that doesn't, or if you had something else in mind, please feel free to ask again. And finally, Kayshawn writes, have there ever been times when channeling that an entity didn't comply with challenging in the name of the Christ principle?
Well, I have only had it happen a couple of times. And in both cases, I simply repeated my challenge. I repeated my tuning, and then I repeated my challenge. And if it wasn't good yet, then I repeated the tuning again, and then I repeated the challenge. And by the third time, I was always able to blow the guy out of the water. Boom. It happened explosively when somebody's resisting like that. It was kind of dramatic, actually.
How did you know or perceive that the initial challenge didn't work?
Well, I asked my gatekeeper. You know, I set up my room and staff it as needed. And one of the things that I place for myself is a gatekeeper. And if anything is questionable, I ask my gatekeeper, did that work? Is that okay? And the gatekeeper will say very, very shortly, yes or no. And two times I got a solid no when it came to did it work. And so I simply repeated, you know, just with more and more care to each part of the process. So that I was doing my absolute best. And the third time, not only did the gatekeeper say that that was okay, but she didn't really need to, because in this case, the entity that was attempting to keep me from tuning and challenging was alive. He was a little 9-year-old boy. And he hated me and did not want me to go to his mother's wedding, getting altogether too much attention. And he was just down on me, and he did not want me to get close. And he resisted and resisted, and when I finally broke it, he howled as if in pain upstairs. And Poopy had no idea what was wrong. His mother, but that was what it was. The timing was perfect. He couldn't hold against the third challenge, and he had to let go. And it actually hurt him. And then, of course, it was all tears, and she can't do this, and she can't come, and of course, Poopy had invited me across the pond to come and be her witness. So naturally, I was going to come. It was foreordained that he was not going to get his way. It was a very clear and probably the most dramatic experience I've ever had of breaking a resistance from a negative source.
That's quite the track record. Well over 1,000 channelings in your life, and only a couple of instances or a few where you perceived that the initial challenge.
Yeah, there were just two. The other one was when someone wanted me to think that they were Ra, and I challenged, and they said, yeah, but I didn't believe them. And my gatekeeper said, do it again. And I only had to do that one twice. They couldn't resist past the first repetition.
Jim, any instances when you perceived that the challenging didn't work or wasn't complied with?
I guess when I first started channeling back in the early 80s, I felt a couple of instances in practice sessions where there was some resistance that I needed to provide another challenge to.
It's like a very effective tool. I can see why you, Carla, have made it an indispensable part of the protocol.
Definitely.
Yeah, his challenge is not the same as mine, by the way.
Jim challenges in the name of the positive polarity?
The Christ consciousness.
Christ consciousness. Okay.
Instead of the Jesus as being one of the Christ consciousness.
And briefly, Carla, what is the criterion for selecting what the instrument is challenging in the name of?
My criterion is that I grew up with the Bible. And in the Bible, you just say, the challenge is Jesus. Can you say that Jesus is Lord?
I mean, something more general. When one is trying to find a challenge that works for them, what is
the criterion? The criteria, I should say, there's more than one. Number one is what you live for. What are you living for? What bull or person or thing would you center of your metaphysical identity? Who are you? And you need to find out who you are and what your center is and how you go on, because that's how you challenge. And if the center of your being is a total belief in Christ consciousness or the positive polarity or doesn't matter what, then you use that. And if you don't figure out who you are and where your metaphysical feet are planted, you don't have any identity in time and space. And you can't operate in the inner realms because you have no identity. So it's important to know what you're living for. And also, number two, it's important to know what you would die for. What principle would you die for? What person would you die for? What thing would you die for? Thing you would die for? If there isn't anything you would die for, then your challenge is weaker.
Thank you. I think that's a great guide for one looking to find what challenging mechanism works for them. Our friend JP sends in a question, and JP writes, in the book The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, a message from Ra was given to David Wilcock on December 22, 1998. In that chapter, Ra uses words, terms, and phrases such as Christ, the true principle of Christ, Christ consciousness, Christ-like, Christ-like abilities, Christ promise, Christ principle, Christ self. Is it therefore correct to assume that the Christ concept is a big part of Ra's vocabulary, and that the concept in language describing Christ and all derivatives is not just an earth concept, but might be a local galaxy or larger area concept also. And JP adds a PS. And to all of you, we and us, may we have a very merry and holy Christmas and try to remember what we are all seeking this time of year and hopefully every day of the year.
Beautiful. Merry Christmas, and we wish it back at you.
And Merry Christmas to you, JP. Before we dive into this question, I want to preface our responses with what I hope might be a clarifying point. And that's that David Wilcock, who has channeled an a-ra through his instrument, has differentiated that channeling from the ra that spoke through the unconscious Carla and during the ra contact of 1981 to 1984. David writes online, "The ra that spoke through the Law of One series was as bulletproof as any channeling ever done, in my own opinion, and that of many others as well." And he goes on to say, "Now you have to draw a clear distinction. There are indeed other channelers who have used the term Ra in their work. It's one of the known Egyptian names and therefore likely to appear. My initial assumption going in would be that other channels who use the name Ra are not in contact with the same Ra that spoke in the Law of One series. I myself do not connect with the entire social memory complex as was done in the Law of One contact, but with my higher self, which happens to be one focal point within that complex. A point that has aspects that are clearly identifiable as my personality, albeit in a more timeless context." And David had also said elsewhere, "It is not the Law of One series, his channeling, and should not be seen as an extension of the same thing." Preface concluded.
Okay. Now, what was the question?
JP was asking, is it therefore correct to assume that the Christ concept is a big part of Ra's vocabulary, and could it be larger than an Earth concept, but maybe local galaxy or larger?
Well, in point of fact, it's not a large part of what he needs to talk about. He can talk all day about the Law of One without mentioning Christ or Christ concepts. However, I discovered when I challenged the Ra group that their reaction was laughter and saying, "Well, do you think you're the only ones that have Christ? You know, Christ is bigger than just Earth." So I assume that they are buying into the Christ concept very much so, as much as anyone on Earth does, has or does. But in terms of their talking about it with Don, it doesn't come up unless by faith. It's not a necessary part of the Law of One. It's just one way to describe the Law of One or to look at the Law of One's love.
Jim, any thoughts on the question?
I'm pretty sure since Ra is of sixth density that they went through the fourth density where it's, you know, one is the Christ consciousness. So I'm sure that that is the foundation for their being, and then wisdom is added to that to make it more effective in service to others, and the ability to share the magic of transformation of the sixth density is also available. So yeah, I think that, you know, that's part of their foundation of their being. They, I don't, like Carla said, we didn't see many places where they referred to that specifically, because I think they probably use other terms or are focused in another direction in their attempt to be of service to us.
They like to stray as little as possible from balance, and did not like particularly to be swayed into going to the wall, shall we say, with a declaration of unconditional love.
Yeah, Ra seemed very picky with their words,
mm-hmm.
and I think that who knows if they had an aversion to the term Christ consciousness, maybe they would have had the concept been discussed. But I think you can find what Christ consciousness basically is being discussed in the Law of One when Ra is talking about unconditional love or the path of the martyr or the fourth density consciousness, similar to the discussion we were just having a couple questions ago. Their vocabulary, though, surely to the extent that they have a vocabulary, what we would call sound vibration complexes, extend far beyond the sum of the words used in the Ra contact. Jim and Carly were pointing out what was discussed in the Ra contact was a result of the questions that Don was asking. Had there been another questioner, it could have been very different concepts discussed. But like Jim was saying, it's the foundation of their being. So in terms of the locality or scope of Christ consciousness, I see it as utterly and completely universal. I mean, as far as the infinite universe is, there is a stage of awareness or consciousness development or spiritual evolution that can be described as Christ consciousness. This question just brought to mind 16.38 from the Law of One, where the questioner asks, "And then the Law of One is truly universal in creating the progression toward the eighth density or octave in all galaxies. Is this correct?" And Ra responds, "I am Ra. This is correct. There are infinite forms, infinite understandings, but the progression is one." So no matter where you go, in space or in time, to the infinite reaches of the universe, the progression is going to be the same through the densities. And the fourth density is emblematic of Christ consciousness, the entity we call Jesus or Yehoshua being just one permutation or face of something that is utterly universal.
I agree completely.
Sounds like we're ready to move on to the next question. Thank you so much, JP. Neo, N-I-O, writes via Bring Forth, and Neo says, "Hi, friends. Following from Carla's suggestion a few weeks ago on the contemplation of queries and a conversation with a fellow Bring Forth member in the chat room recently, I thought of positing this question to you. I commended my friend in our Law of One chat room for their uninhibited sharing of personal circumstances as well as their totally honest feelings and concerns of them. To me, this is something of a quality, and I express praise for it. My friend then posed this question to me. Yes, but how do I foster that? Initially, I thought back to when I found a sense of cleansing or relief to just share indiscriminately what was pressing on my mind the most in my personal affairs, regardless of who hears and who forms an opinion on it. However, I ended up a bit tongue-tied because I have in the past been a bit of a bulldozer in my attempts to be of aid. I now have a more thoughtful response, but wondered what you guys thought on this." Here is Neo's thoughtful response. "How can we promote that openness in environments that are not as welcoming? And could my..." I'm sorry, we'll divide up his second part into question two. So we'll stop there and leave it as, "How can we promote that openness in environments that are not as welcoming?" My first thought is to, if you feel an environment could benefit by openness, my first thought is to be a way shower in that regard. It's difficult and problematic, especially for the positive entity, to attempt to change others or to change an environment, but one can always change the self. So to encourage openness, be openness. Show openness, and perhaps others might follow that example and respond in kind and create an exponential building of openness. Carla or Jim, any thoughts on that one?
Go ahead, Mickey.
Well, I'm still trying to grok the question. I'm not sure what the problem is. What I'm picking up is that Neo feels that in the past he's been too strong in his attempt to counsel or aid others, and that he needs to be more reserved. Openness, though. I assume that he's wanting to foster equal and open sharing between him and whomever he's speaking with. I guess, Gary, if I'm correct in all those assumptions, I would go along with what you said, that be openness and just maybe first ask what the other person feels or thinks or needs so that you can be of most service by actually becoming the person as much as you can be.
I wouldn't speak unless I had a question to answer. And if I had a question to answer, I would try to gauge the answer to the sensibility of the person that asked the question, which would mean I would open up my own thinking, not much or a lot, or, you know, just I'd have to figure out some estimate of what the guy was really asking. And then do my best to answer. Sometimes people are tentative in their asking. Sometimes people are aggressive. So you have to listen to the question, not just the content of the question, but the way it's asked. But barring the asking of a question, I would not enter into talking about the Law of One or anything like that. I would try to find out what he was interested in and talk about that. Try to grow where he's planted. I guess in a way I'm protective of the information, and I don't want it to fall, as Jesus said, among the swine. I don't want it to fall on hearing ears.
As Ra says succinctly, one can only serve to the extent that it is requested.
Yes.
It's the negative polarity who ignores the request and calls itself to service, calls itself on crusades.
Yeah. Proselytizes.
The thrust of Neo's question is a little difficult to clarify because I think he went off in a couple different directions. He did have that sentence where he said, however, I ended up a bit tongue-tied because I have in the past been a bit of a bulldozer in my attempts to be of aid. But then the question itself seems to head in a different direction. So I hope we're addressing the multiplicity of your question, Neo. What I marked off as the second part of his question is, and could my past sense of relief resulting from the sharing of my burdens, I had a history of keeping issues to myself, actually be an unblocking of my yellow ray energy center?
Yes, definitely. If you are coming clean and talking honestly about what's bothering you, what's on your mind, etc., you're definitely making new strides.
Yeah, I would think generally yes, or at least potentially it could be an unblocking of yellow ray to share with other selves of your burdens.
Mm-hmm. It is the pride of the one who keeps things to himself, that only he can solve his problems. And how wonderful it is when he discovers that a problem shared is often a problem solved.
So do you think then, say, in the case of a person who has a temperament that is inward-directed and or introverted and is just generally private, one who does not share their burdens, do you think that's necessarily a blockage or just a temperament?
Well, you can call it different things depending on the way you look at it. But if you're not willing to share what you're thinking about with someone else, then you're automatically assuming that that person has nothing to offer you, which I think is a little, you never know what that person may have to offer you. Now, if the person hasn't offered to help, you know, it hasn't indicated that he wants to get involved in your discussion, then I could certainly see not exposing myself to an unwilling party. But if a person is saying, well, what's going on? Well, tell them as much as you can in a comfortable way and see what the person has to offer you in response.
Jim, any thoughts on this one?
I think probably the orange ray would be the ray that would be most worked upon by sharing your burdens or problems or sense of self with another person, because that's usually a one-to-one type of sharing. If you were in a group of people that was doing that as a group, then you'd be working on yellow ray. But I think this is probably more towards the orange ray.
Yeah, that makes sense. Would you see sharing then of one's burdens being a potentially unblocking activity?
Yeah, I think that all this energy that comes our way that we feel in the way of a catalyst or our sense of looking at things, the framework through which we see our experiences, this energy is freely given to us, and if it passes freely through us and we're able to share the way we're experiencing it, then we're unblocked. But if we're, for some reason we find it difficult to share this, how the energy comes through us, and maybe a little knot that formed over here or a curve or a bend or a twist, then we're holding on to it, and we could do it long enough that it becomes part of our personality or part of our the temperament, as you said, I think. But just because it's part of our temperament doesn't mean that it's not something we can't work on and can't unbind and let energies flow freely again.
Per usual, I agree with you both. That takes us to 1:54. Not enough time for another question, but it works out, as it so often does, perfectly in terms of time, because I found several quotes from Ra that discuss the benefit of sharing with other selves in different contexts. So I'll read those, and then we'll sign off for the day. In 44.10, Don is asking about nullifying the influence of negative greeting, and Ra responds, "There are various methods. We shall offer the most available or simple. To share the difficult contact with the other selves associated with this working," and goes on to describe more. In 17.30, Ra says, "The best way of service to others is the constant attempt to seek to share the love of the Creator as it is known to the inner self. This involves self-knowledge and the ability to open the self to the other self without hesitation. This involves, shall we say, radiating that which is the essence or the heart of the mind-body-spirit complex." In 18.6, Ra says, "You have two simple directives, awareness of the intelligent energy expressed in nature, awareness of the intelligent energy expressed in self to be shared, when it seems appropriate, by the entity with the social complex." I think we can skip the rest of that quote. And finally, in 19.13, Ra says, "This catalyst then is shared between peoples as an important part of each self's development, as well as the experiences of the self in solitude and the synthesis of all experience through meditation. The quickest way to learn is to deal with other selves. This is a much greater catalyst than dealing with the self. Dealing with the self without other selves is akin to living without what you would call mirrors. Thus, the self cannot see the fruits of its beingness. Thus, each may aid each by reflection. This is also a primary reason for the weakening of the physical vehicle, as you call the physical complex." And perfectly, it's 1:57. So, Carla, would you like to say goodbye to our viewers or listeners?
I would. If you guys can see us, we'd like to know from you and find out what's going on. Yes, I would like to tell you that we love you all very much so. You are ours to help if we can. And if we possibly can help, oh my goodness, what a joy. So please think about the Law of One this week and find those questions that you may have. If you just open the Law of One anywhere, you'll end up with a question, I promise. We really need those questions, and we're so grateful for those who have sent questions in this week. Thank you, everyone from JP, who we thank every week, to all of the others who have sent in fewer times, but just as valuable and treasured to us. Thank you so much, each and every one of you. And please send more in, because as always, we gobble them up at a prodigious rate and we will run out very quickly if you don't send some more in. Thanks a lot for that. And again, we love you all. A beautiful, quiet, crisp mass.
Thank you, Carla. Happy Christmas, happy holidays, and happy solstice from all of us at LL Research. We will be back on air next on January 6, 2015. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions this week. If you'd like to send a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful couple of weeks. We'll be here in two Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
Planets turn and the old stars